podcast number 22, January 12th, 2012. Welcome to the podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown. This is it's a podcast where we're going to discuss the news this time. I've got the Parakeets Dodger Balance Party in the room with me. The recording I do is hasn't changed too much over the last few months. I use an iMac. I often use the built-in microphone. Right now, I'm using a Shure external mic. It's a good one. It's a Shure, but it's on the more basic end of Shure microphones. I think the setup in here is good. I don't think that it's elaborate, but it does work well for what I do. And the room that I'm in here actually is the type of room that you're going to find was added to the house. It was the type of room that many rooms like in Ohio, where I am, are, where the original house was built, and then they took it was a two-story house, and they put a little one-room addition on the back. But I think that you know, it makes it a pretty good office in the back. It has a door and a doorway to come in, and then it's got a nice square a room here that the birds do hang out with me down here sometimes. The thing is, they're not always in here that much in the winter, because in the winter it gets really cold in all of Ohio where we live, but especially in rooms that are sort of adjoining a building where you have one heat vent, but you have three walls that are exposed and its own roof. So a lot of this room is exposed, and that makes it a few degrees cooler in here than in the front room or upstairs. So a lot of times in the winter, the birds are in different parts of the house for a lot of the time, but they're down here right now because it's only 45 out. It's pretty nice here. So you can't complain northeast Ohio in the winter when you're talking about the temperature being in the 40s. Now, I have something I do want to complain about, and that's some stories in the news. Well, I was appalled, but not at all surprised, when I saw the story about a video leaking out that shows, it shows a very appalling situation where it appears that U.S. Marines are urinating on the corpses of Afghans. It has people like Hillary Clinton scrambling.
I want to express my total dismay the story concerning our Marines, who I have the highest respect and admiration for, but I share completely the views expressed by Secretary Panetta earlier today. I join him in...
Well, this kind of behavior is appallingly routine, and there needs to be a serious examination by a lot of Americans about what's being done by the armed forces, and I think people need to develop a more realistic outlook about the daily reality on the ground. And anyway, why are we still in Afghanistan? Barack Obama's administration, despite his campaign promises, has been not at all transparent, and one of the consequences of that is that they try to cover up embarrassing secrets. That shows how they approached an early decision to not release photos they had previously promised to release that depicted wrongdoing in graphic terms by soldiers in Iraq. If you want to see a link to that information, check out the show notes, djmcloud.com. Look for show notes for podcast 21, and that'll let you see the links to the articles. Now, another article that I actually wanted to talk about was one on WashingtonMonthly.com by Steve Bannon. Now, this is a pretty well written article where Steve Bannon talks about just what a terrible campaign Mitt Romney is running. What a strange speech. Recently, when he won the New Hampshire primary, he gave a speech that these are quotes from this article. He says, "Our campaign is about more than replacing a president. It is about saving the soul of America." So I think this is just appalling and inappropriate for Mitt Romney to presume to know how to save the soul of a country or at all in any way. I just can't believe the depth of contempt that I have for Mitt Romney. I think that Barack Obama has been an utter disappointment. I can't say that I'm supporting him, but I do think that these Republicans are really showing what a mean-spirited and intellectually bankrupt group of mercenaries and douchebags they are. And I think that you can see how Mitt Romney is so appalling that Newt Gingrich has actually made serious and considerable attacks. And in a strange move for Republicans, Newt Gingrich is attacking another Republican's record on business. Now, it turns out that Mitt Romney is one of those scumbag business private equity types. Well, he was when he was at Bain Capital. This is the type of operation that looks at companies and takes things that can be measured in accounting terms and reduces costs and will inflate whatever numbers they can after buying a company up, and then they'll just try to turn it around and sell it for a lot of money after making superficial and mostly short-term gains by slashing expenses that often leads to lower product quality, lower worker satisfaction. Long-term, the company is going to be hurt, but the numbers look like they've been improved, and they're going to sell it to the next group of investors. That type of strategy, that type of private equity practice is reprehensible. It affected a lot of people and their jobs, and it didn't create value for the economy. You can see what Paul Krugman's written about that to see how he explains that. And so it really is just a record that Newt Gingrich is quite capable of going after, and for some reason he's seen fit to actually go after the record of Mitt Romney. So I think that's good, but I think that, of course, Newt Gingrich is a lousy candidate who has a serious authoritarian streak that, he couldn't be trusted with power under any circumstances. Now, I think Rick Santorum it's hard to figure out if he's just a really stupid guy or if he's a psychopath or what his problem is. But Rick Santorum is just so obviously a total idiot and just it has such hateful beliefs. It's unbelievable that that he's gotten this far in the campaign, but I guess really in the context of the Republican field, it's not that strange. I think when we look at like campaigns and politics, there's been a lot of debate lately. There's been a lot of talk about journalism and the convoluted ideas around objectivity and things like that, and that you can really see how stupid and behind the times, even these benighted times, you can see how far behind the times the New York Times is with their public editor Arthur Brisbane writing an article that's basically asking whether lies should be called out by reporters. I mean, obviously, if someone being written about is making a false claim, a factually false claim, that should be noted in the account. It shouldn't be passed on to the reader at face value. But that's what the New York Times public editor is asking this like it's a serious question. You know what, the article is really stupid, but there is a link to it in the show notes, and so you can read the comments, because that's probably the part that's worth reading. If you take a look at that section, there's a lot of people who are basically just making the straightforward and obvious point that it's stupid that he would even ask that question. But it's not. I think it really shows where the actual state of the journalistic community it is, a large amount, parts of it, especially areas, you know, very large publications like the New York Times. Let's see. I want to see if someone in the comment section writes, quote, since your organization charges for your content in various ways, there is an implicit understanding that you are not simply a pipe through which the content flows. Your readers presume that part of the value you're adding and charging for is an inquiry into the truth of statements you report on, unquote. I think that's one way, civil way to make that point. So I think it makes me wonder why people would bother paying for New York Times. I guess there's a limit, of number of articles you can read in a month, but I don't know. I think that the quality is definitely, the quality is definitely, down a bit from what I remember 5 years ago. I think that's a fair judgment, but it's certainly clear that most print-based publications are on the way out, and more are closing all the time. Now there's the part of the field of industries that's replacing the old print industries. It is the world of Apple, including ebooks with their iBooks app and all that. So I guess that's the best connection I can make to this next item, which is an experience firsthand. I was at the Genius Bar because my wife had an issue with her iPhone 4. It just wouldn't start up. I pressed different buttons. I think I even pressed the top and the bottom at the same time, but it didn't seem to work. They brought it to the Apple Store, and they took a look at it, and they pressed those buttons and it started up. And so I guess they have a good feel for handling those devices, and it was good that they were able to start it again. So then my wife asked, well, you know, what happened, to the phone? I think that's what she asked. And they told her that she needed to close down apps routinely. She needed to double press the home button on her iPhone and then go in and then after holding down of one of the apps that pops up, the circle with the red line in it, the circle with the minus sign that's red pops up in the corner, and you can hit that and you can basically shut down applications. You know, you kill the apps manually. Now, I guess there's been a lot of talk that's what Genius Bar employees are advising people that bring their iPhones in to do. And it's very strange because it seems to go against mainstream nerd practice. I don't know how else to put it. A lot of Apple geeks use their iPhones in will use apps that will create memory issues or you know, cause some sort of problem, and then they'll go and manually kill that app if it's acting up. But the way that memory is supposed to be managed in iOS, geeks tend to think that they don't need to go and just routinely shut down a bunch of the apps. And furthermore, there's criticism that is cultivating a user experience that is not along the lines of what Apple tends to try to cultivate, try to encourage with their users. Now, I definitely think there's strong feelings on this. There are a lot of people that think that the Genius Bar is giving strange advice, but I don't know. I mean, I think I tend to think that I only need to kill apps when I'm having problems with them, and I seem to do fine using my iPhone 4S, and that's what I do with my iPhone 4 also. But I don't know, you know, and Jessica uses different apps than I do, so she's gonna have different experience, and she has a different phone. So I don't know, you know, as much as a lot of people that are in this debate, but it seems like a lot of the informed geeks are saying that you don't need to go and routinely shut down a lot of those, you know, a whole series of apps or all your apps, because iOS is supposed to manage memory very rigorously by itself. January 12, 2020. You've been listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown. You can send us an email, podcast@sf3am.com. You can check me out on Twitter at Pacific Pelican. You can listen to our recent episodes on iTunes. Just search for us, or you can find us on the web, djmcloud.com.